Hey, it's Peter here with my FSHD.
Don't you ever just want to stop, settle down, and live something approaching a normal life?
This is normal life.
Hey, you know, when we started my FSHD, you know, the whole point was to bring our FSHD research testing to everybody all around the U.S. and all around the world, and also to educate the community. I find out that when I talk to people, man, you guys just want to know everything. You guys are like information sponges, you know, and, you know, to provide the scientific information to y'all as in a way that's accessible, right? Because science papers can be kind of tough. Y'all got different backgrounds, but y'all have curiosity. And you want to know, what's this therapy that I'm hearing about? What's this giant earth-shattering breakthrough? You know, the 10th breakthrough we've had this month that is being posted on a website type of thing. Yeah, it's not really a breakthrough. I'll let you know when it is. So you can decide for yourself. Empower you with information about your own epigenetic status. Empower you with information about the potential health of your family and such, as well as information as to the therapies that are coming. So you can pick out what trials you might be interested in, what's truly exciting, what's just a bunch of BS, and everything in between. And at the same time, also try to, you know, just let you know what it's like to be a scientist. I mean, I've told you our journey. You want to know why does everything take so long? Well, you know my answer. Not everybody's in one. Well, two answers. It's hard. FSHD is hard. Science is hard. It's not. I realize on NCIS, you just need Abby in the lab and she figures everything out in 2 hours. That just ain't how it works, right? We may be that weird, but science takes a long time. But also, not everybody's as helpful as Abby. There are a lot of agendas and motivations out there, not all of which are to do what's best for you or the field. And sometimes those are some surprising people and sources that have those ulterior motivations. I just tell you how it is. I mean, this is our journey. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody approves of what I say, but this is the God honest truth about our journey, what we've done, the people we've run into, the people we've run over, and the people that tried to run over us. And you know who we work with, and you know who we don't work with, and you know why. It's not all, rainbows and sunshine and lollipops. But you know what? We're still making progress. The field is making progress. Hell, even some of the bad guys are making progress. And, you know, we have to suck it up and work with, sometimes you just have to suck it up and work with people you despise because it's really for the good of the field. It's tough. It really sucks when they know you got to do it. So, but anyway, we do it. We're doing what we can. But you know, I did mention that, it does. I guess I get a little too personal sometimes. I don't know. Wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm probably the last guy that should have a podcast because I don't know. I don't plan these things out. I just tell you what's on my mind and when I'm thinking it. And, but you know, wear the heart on the sleeve. And this is what it's all about.
All right. So how do I die?
You don't.
And, you know, me and Scully got something in common because I made a deal with the devil and we're going to, kind of hooker by crook, we're going to get FSHD cured. And I mean cured. And when I say we, I mean the royal we is the field. You know, we just play a small part. You know, I think we've already played a big part in diagnostics. We were the first to show that the distalmost D4Z4 repeat. And if you look at the methylation stat, that's diagnostic for FSHD1. And, also prognostic. So we showed that in 2015 that you can, the methylation levels distinguish healthy from FSHD and FSHD affected from asymptomatic. CRISPR inhibition, you know, she's the CRISPR goddess because she invented CRISPR inhibition for FSHD back in 2015. You know, and now there's at least two companies taking CRISPR inhibition to clinic. Man, that's a contribution, man. And you know, anytime you can see, so your contribution in the lab actually go to clinic and actually help people, man, that's the best thing in the world. So you don't have to be the one that takes it all the way, but someone's going to take it all the way. Granted, we think we got some little tricks that we think are better than others, but you know, that's us, you know, we're a little arrogant, sure. But you know, when I say cure, I mean cure. What cure means is return to the healthy state. Okay. Stopping the destruction, telling you that you're not going to get any worse. That's not a cure. That's a therapy. Slowing down destruction. We already have therapies. you know, depending on how you're doing, some exercise, antioxidants, some nutrition, some supplements, hell, pain medicine, right? I mean, that's therapies, you know, so I know I'm promising you therapies. I ain't promising anything that you don't already have. Now, we do want, though, you know, disease-modifying therapies that target DUX4 and shut down the destruction. That'll be significant, right? You're not going to get any worse. But a cure means you're going to get back to a healthy state. A cure means that Kate is back up on her skis. Ben's getting his scallops down there in the bay. T's back mountain climbing. Sawyer's, you know, on the mound, striking people out left and right with that wicked fastball he's got and a little bit of a curve. That's what a cure is. We're getting, okay, you know, you're... And so that's actually the bar that we're in. That's a tough bar. Let me tell you, a lot of people roll their eyes at me and say, oh, man, don't promise them that. I'm not promising them. That's the bar. That's what we're aiming for. Okay. Shut down the destruction and then build and get your muscle back. And that is precisely why we built the pig model for FSHG. You know, part one is we wanted to take care of the issues with dosing and toxicology and just a number of issues that lead to failed clinical trials and other neuromuscular diseases for not having a large animal model. We wanted to actually avoid that. So instead of going from mouse to human, you know, through a pig, and so we built a pig for that. We're still building, we're still characterizing, but it's getting there. But the other part of it is for building back your muscle, getting your strength back. You know, you have, a very dystrophic environment. Your muscles, where your muscles were, they're very fibrotic, very fatty, and sometimes they're absent. And, how are you going to get that back? We can't just experiment on people and just jamming things in, although there are some people going to Mexico and doing that. We need an experimental system to do that. And a mouse, you know, we can do certain things in a mouse, but you can do my mice. I don't know, man. You know, the musculature of a mouse, the circulatory system, the immune system, the metabolism, regeneration, everything in a mouse is just very unhuman-like. Pig's very human-like, okay? And it turns out that when you express DUX4 in pigs, we're learning, man, it looks a lot like FSHD. I'm really excited about our preliminary data on the pigs, and hopefully soon we'll be able to release these for everybody to work on. But I think one of the big aspects will be for muscle regeneration, or potentially some therapeutics that, you know, different, you know, that might slow down or stop the destruction and rebuild muscle before you've affected DUX4. Now, granted, DUX4 is always the target. I don't want Brad coming up here and shaking me up. You know, I know you got to target DUX4 and shut down the destruction, but there's always the potential of slowing things down. Ultimately, though, we want to shut down the destruction and get your muscles back. This is actually why we're at this meeting. It's the Biologic Scaffolds for Regenerative Medicine meeting in Napa, California. I was invited by Dr. Stephen Badalak from University of Pittsburgh and their Center for Regenerative Medicine. He organizes the meeting. And, you know, the reason I'm here is to kind of educate this crowd with all of their cool goo and matrix concoctions and synthetic thing. Oh, well, actually, not supposed to be synthetic. It's biologic. But, yeah, some of them have other synthetic things on the side, maybe not talking about them. But there's just a lot of technology for improving muscle health and regaining muscle mass for a lot of other conditions, like volumetric muscle loss that our soldiers get when an IED goes off or you're in a car wreck, cancer cachexia. There's just a lot of aging, where it's a muscle disease and you're losing muscle mass, you know, from age 35 on. And there's just a lot of technology and that nobody's really thought about using for dystrophies, right? And so the take-home message from my talk was a lot of these muscular dystrophies like FSHD, myotonic, Duchenne, limb-girdle, SMA, you know, a lot of these things, you know, we're getting close to having disease-altering therapies that can shut down the destruction. So there's going to be a huge unmet clinical need to get your muscle back. But these are not healthy environments that they're used to be working for. These are dystrophic environments full of fat, full of fibrosis, or missing muscles, whatever, you know, and we need to see if these technologies can work in this environment and how to tweak them to get them to work, right? And of all, you know, interestingly enough, the person who is leading this charge and getting into this is Chip Wilson, our Lululemon friend with FSHD and this, founder of Solve FSHD, and his partner in crime, I guess we'll say, you know, his good friend, Neil Camarda of FSHD Canada. You know, Neil, we thank the world of Neil, and FSHD Canada has done more for FSHD field than I think they'll ever get credit for. But these guys, you know, they want their muscle strength back, right? Stopping the destruction is not good enough. And actually, before Solve FSHD existed, this actually is a project that, Chip brought to us to investigate. He was searching the world with Neil about who has regenerative medicine technology. You know, can we 3D print a muscle? Can we whatever? You know, what's out there that doesn't know about, what technology doesn't know about FSHD that could be applicable to FSHD? If you look at, you know, his opening press conference for Solve FSHD, this is kind of, you know, this is what he talks about, right? And that's also why it's about aging in a bigger picture thing, right? Regaining muscle strength. And so, but we were in this even before Solve. And, you know, Chip was a great supporter of ours for our CRISPR inhibition. If I see, you know, still a good friend of ours. I've been a bit critical of his foundation and the way it's been run. But, you know, hey, we can agree to disagree on certain things. We also can agree on other things and work together when we need to. And, he's a great guy. I had dinner with him at the meeting here Friday night, Thursday night we had dinner. And, a great time, really great guy, great respect for him. And he's really trying to make a difference in FSHD. And now, $100 million can go a lot of places. And I'm just going to leave it alone. But one of the places that they want to go are in muscle regeneration and getting back your strength. And I totally approve of that. I think it's really innovative and really has a lot of foresight in thinking about this, what to do after the cure, after the therapy, you know, after you've stopped the destruction, and what can you do now to slow it down? And that's where his mind is. And so that's why I'm here. And man, I got to tell you, there's some really cool technology out there. I would just be blown away by some of it. Some of the kind of gels and some of the things. We see some of the impact some of this technology can have in a healthy system to regrow muscle in a healthy and otherwise healthy environment. It's pretty amazing. And even, you know, very scarred tissue and stuff. But again, they're genetically healthy and they're not dystrophic. And so our idea is, you know, we're working with some of this technology and trying to see if, you know, using first our mouse model, which again, I'm just not my big fan of, but first testing it out in the mouse model, but then soon in the pig model to see, does this technology improve a dystrophic environment? Can it build muscle in a dystrophic environment? And if you have FSHD, like a pig with FSHD, you know, as much as a pig can get FSHD, if a pig that has expressed DUX4 to create a pathological dystrophic environment, if you shut down the DUX4 expression, therapy for the pig, what can you do for them to regain their muscle mass and try to get to clinic? You know, and some of the stuff is already in people. It's already FDA approved for other conditions. And so it's just, to me, it's just tremendous foresight on them to do it. And again, you know, but I got to tell you, this is one of the things, you know, I talked with Ben way back when, and I, you know, one of the reasons I talk with a lot of, you know, Ben's my grad student with FSHD, and I talk with a lot of y'all, you know, just not getting any worse is not good enough, right? That is not the vision you have when you're being promised a cure or therapy. You know, donate your, you know, little Billy's college fund, and we're going to give you a cure. You don't realize that you're just not going to get any worse, right? And, you know, I just heard again and again, we got to get, you know, got to get better. And as we looked into it and the dosing issues for large animal models and why you need one, it really became apparent that we really need one so that you can get your muscle strength back. That's what I want to do. And I can't promise you anything because I don't know if it's going to work. Nobody's done it before, but we have created the tool, right? Instead of thinking about it afterwards, instead of in 2025 when you have your therapy, then thinking about, gee, we're going to spend 3 years to make a pig model. You know, we thought about this in 2019. We need the pig model now so we can start these technologies now so we can do combinatorial therapy, shut down the destruction, and get your strength back. Now, how are you going to get it back? Well, and with it, this is all through some sort of these injectable matrices and gels and, you know, natural compounds that you find. And maybe the answer is going to be cell therapy, right? You know, you have Vidae Therapeutics, that's Catherine Wagner's company that Solve is funding. Michael Kaiba and and Rita Perlingero have a company on cell therapy. I think Rita has been on the Zoom or whatever recently. You know, there's stem cell therapies out there that there's just a lot of application, right? They need the pig model too, and I'm more than happy to give it to them all. To say, you know, maybe cell plus matrix therapies. Now, what's a matrix? So, now if you actually take a muscle and you remove all the cells, you actually have a scaffold under there, the extracellular matrix. It's not just a whole bunch of cells just glued together. They're actually attached to it's actually created by the cells, and defects in the extracellular matrix and your collagens and things actually cause a number of the muscular dystrophies and neuromuscular diseases. So it's not just the cells that are important. It's what the cells are attached to and what the cells are, you know, if you just think about it as, it's kind of like that egg crate stuff, you know, if you have egg crate, if you're an arts and crafty person, just real egg crate with eggs, you know, something to set in and hold. I mean, it's not just a bunch of cells glued together functioning to make a muscle. There's all this structure that is required for maintaining muscle shape and force and integrity. And this is all and for signaling. And these things, and the matrix is filled with signaling molecules. And this is how signals move between cells through the extracellular matrix and whatever. Anyway, he would have a whole podcast on the ECM, but ECM is extracellular matrix. But, you know, some people have purified some of these molecules and try to use them therapeutically. You know, that's one of the things we're actually doing, are using some molecules purified from the extracellular matrix that contain anti-inflammatory factors, some regulatory factors, and they're involved in immune modulation. And the idea is, you know, if we pump some of these into your dystrophic muscle, could it slow down the destruction, even in the absence of DUX4 altering therapies? But especially afterwards, right? So these are all the questions we're asking now. Now is the time to ask them. Let's get this figured out now. We don't have to wait until antisense works or CRISPR inhibition works or anything else. We can do it now, and that's what we're doing. So that's why we're at this meeting, is we're trying to broaden the scope of this these types of biological scaffold, the whole field. And this is the go-to meeting. Of course, it's in Napa, so everybody wants to go. People all around the world are here with their with their biologic molecules that are applicable to regenerative medicine. And we're telling them all about FSHD and to start thinking about how to use their technology to improve FSHD muscle health before and after we shut down DUX4, and to show them what kind of tools we have. Here's our mouse model. Here's our pig model, what we know about the pig model. Again, you know, we're still working on it. It's not quite ready for prime time, but it's getting there. We're getting there. It's actually remarkably FSHD in the few cases where we're able to engineer it correctly. The pigs just turn out to be a little more difficult than we realized. We've run into some unanticipated problems, as you do in science. But, you know, it's coming, and I think proof of concept, it's going to work. We're going to have a really nice FSHD model pig to work on to do all of this type of technology. All right, so that's why we're here. And like I mentioned, you know, Chip is here. Neil Camarda is here from FSHD Canada. Actually, Eva Chin is even here from Solve FSHD. She is not a fan of this technology, but, you know, maybe she's coming around. You know, I'm always open to new things. Hopefully, I guess people, you know, maybe people's minds can be changed, and we'll see. I think it's worth a shot. Neil always talks about shots on goal. I think this stuff is worth a shot. Interestingly, also FSHD Global is here. Emma Weatherly, who is going to be joining us. She is the managing director of FSHD Global Research Foundation in Australia. You know that they're on our list. I was thinking about this. You know how there's Angie's List, at least in the U.S. there's something called Angie's List. These are all these person Angie recommends all of these services or businesses to do things, you know, and it becomes quite a good seal of approval. I was thinking Angie's List. I got sort of a Peter's List, you know, Peter's List of foundations. You know, FSHD Global Research Foundation in Australia is definitely on the list of go-to foundations. You know, in the U.S., it's a Chris Carino Foundation for FSHD, the Friends of FSHD Research in Seattle with Rick and Terry Colella, you know, Neil Camarda and FSHD Canada in Calgary. And that's who to go to. AMI FSH if you're in France, and also the Dux Foundation in France. And a Brefu in Brazil. You know, there's, you know, these are all on our list of your go-to foundations. And that's because these are the foundations that have this forward thinking and are very innovative in thinking about how to improve, how to respond to the patient community, be responsive and improve your condition. And so, you know, Emma's here to learn what they're, you know, everything about what there is in the current regenerative medicine space. And interestingly enough, also Dr. Rob Caspis is here from Melbourne. And he's actually, you know, we've worked together on diagnostics in Florida, but he's also an expert in regenerative medicine for muscle for Duchenne muscular dystrophy and is getting into the FSHD space. So both Emma and Rob are going to join us out on the deck. And before that, I've got another world premiere for you from our man, Jagger the Kid. His newest one is called Colin, and that's coming up next. And then we got Emma and Rob talking to us from the Biologic Scaffolds for Regenerative Medicine meeting in Napa, California. So stay tuned.
Thanks, Ruby.
To the sky, like, man, I wanna be ballin'. 25, 7, 3, 65, disassociate, man. That's small thing, sorry, I can't relate. Tryna write a song, but I can't remember what happened yesterday. Soon as things come, man, they just gon' run away. Come back on another day, but my demons never go away. They just stay up in my brain. They just stay up in my brain, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's why I dissociate. Stony, yeah, so I won't feel my face. Think it's twisted logic, maybe I won't feel my brain. Don't get me wrong, no, I'm not addicted. I just use some conversation. I don't get no compensation. I've been gunning for some conversation, but I feel like I'm in a different world, but the same, like I'm in the matrix. Feeling like I had a midnight sun, I've been stuck in stasis. Don't know why it all won't work out, so I trade all of my bases. I've been switching faces. Faces feel like I'm caged in. That's why I'm higher than stay station. Why are they all hating? They ain't seen what I seen, but they gon' act like they can choose better than me. And what are you doing? Calling, yeah, I've been calling. Looking up to the sky, like, man, I wanna be ballin'. 25, 7, 3, 65, disassociate, man. Students come and they just gon' run away. Come back on another day, but my demons never go away. They just stay up in my brain. And if shit comes to me, I mess with memory. I ain't gotta think about it, and it's just happening. I don't even know what the fuck is happening. Calling, yeah, I've been calling. Looking up to the sky, like, man, I wanna be ballin'. 25, 7, 3, 65, disassociate, man. Life's small things, sorry, I can't relate. Tryna write a song, but I can't remember what happened yesterday. Soon as things come, man, they just gon' run away. Come back on another day, but my demons never go away. They just stay up in my brain.
All right, that was Jagger the Kid with Colin, and yeah, he's going to be posting his whole, essentially, I guess it's an album coming up pretty soon, and we'll let you know where to find it and how to access. And he's got some amazing new stuff that he's coming out with now. So next we're going to the deck out at the Silverado Spa and Resort in Napa, California, where they're toasting the Biologic Scaffolds in Regenerative Medicine meeting. I have to apologize. The sound audio is a little bit rough. I forgot my microphone, and we're out on the deck. It's a wine and cheese reception. We're just having wine and tacos. And it's California. And I tried to cancel out the noise, but I apologize. It's a little bit rough, but you'll get the gist. It's a really good conversation with Emma Weatherly from FSHD Global Research Foundation and Dr. Rob Caspis from Melbourne, joining Takiko's there as well, and Emma's husband, Rob. And we're just hanging out, having a chat. So I hope you enjoy.
All right, as promised, I'm here with one of my absolute favorite people. Actually, two of my favorite people. Hell, three of my favorite people. I have Emma Weatherly is here with me from Brisbane and FSHD Global Research Foundation. You guys all know that's one of my absolute favorite foundations because they know how to do it right. And also got to, she brought her fuzzy friend here. Rob Kaspis is here with us, and he's a researcher. I guess your specialty is in regenerative medicine. Would that
tissue
be
engineering?
Tissue engineering,
muscle engineering.
He's from Melbourne, so another friend from down under. I got Takako here with me across the table, and actually we have a third wheel. All right. Emma's husband, Rob, is here with us. We're in Napa, California, and we are here for the Biological Scaffolds for Regenerative Medicine meeting. That's correct?
That is correct.
All right. So, Emma, why are you at this meeting?
I'm at this meeting because FSHD Global is really interested in muscle regeneration, both from a therapeutic perspective while we wait for the therapies, but also to look at what the unmet need will be after effective therapies are delivered, because it's not going to be enough just to halt disease progression. We're going to want to build back muscle, and we're going to want our whole patient community to realize their full health potential. And that's going to need, you know, a combination of therapy approaches, and muscle regeneration is going to be something that we'll all need.
Okay. No, I agree. So, Rob, why are you here?
To learn.
Just to learn. It's always good to learn some more stuff. That's a long way to come to learn.
Yeah, well,
for the food, really, isn't it?
The food is great. But I work with Emma, and we've created an entity called AFRA, has AFRA.
EFRA. Okay.
It's the Australian FSHD Research Alliance. And we have a model of how to actually get FSHD research done in a land where there's a deficiency of funding. And so we have a company, spin-out company called Facio Biotherapies. And we have St. Vincent's Hospital in Melbourne, where I work. And we have FSH Global, where Emma works. Mm-hmm. And is that? Oh, that's right. RMIT, which is where I work. Yeah. So RMIT is the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, and it's an absolute locker room full of pigeonhole science that is brilliant science and brilliant scientists. And you can just go and grab someone if you need something made. And it's, I work in the engineering facility. So we're working on a gene therapy cure, and we're also working on diagnostics, and we're working on a cell therapy approach, a tissue engineering approach for FSHD.
All right. Well, that's good. There's a lot going on. I know I'm working with you guys on the diagnostics. That's kind of my role, but we'd be happy to pitch in on the other stuff too. You know, we do some gene therapy.
Well you're the chief planner.
So I am here because I was invited to come give a talk and educate the crowd. This scientific crowd here is, well, they don't know anything about muscular dystrophy. They're really here. They're tissue engineers, and they build, I don't know, like meshes for surgery. It sounds like a bunch of ways to connect parts of various organs that have problems and stuff, and, you know, rebuild new tissues. And we wanted to get them thinking about skeletal muscle as a tissue that needs to be rebuilt in muscular dystrophy, that it's not going to be good enough just to stop the destruction. We want to build back the muscle, but also, as you pointed out the other day, it could potentially be valuable before we have a treatment, because this type of technology could slow down disease or even be impactful for other aspects of an FSHD-er's life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really see an opportunity for injury management. We all know living with FSHD means we're at a high potential for falls. We have a higher than average surgical intervention rate. We need, we have imbalances of our joints. We have more prone to dislocation. We have spinal issues. And what this conference has really highlighted to me is the application for this kind of technology in the general population. And, you know, it's already being used in humans for volumetric muscle repair. So that's interesting as a standalone. But where might it be more useful to us as a quality of life, you know, pain management, and, you know, joint stabilization opportunity? And we don't know yet, you know, if it would be applicable or if it would be a benefit to us. But that's what we need to find out about.
So for those of you out there, I just got a speech from Emma about how unsure of herself she is. She doesn't know any science, and she's so worried if she's really right for this position. And so here's the deal. She's in a room with a bunch of scientists who live and breathe everything, you know, everything from FSHD to matrix biology to regenerative medicine. And she popped up with this idea, and everyone's kind of stopped and thought about it. And now it's like the hottest thing that they're thinking about is because Emma spoke up, because no one had thought of it, because we're not thinking of, because nobody else in the room really was an FSHD patient, at least with the same issues that you're having. And so it turns out, actually, when I gave my talk today, it was actually the main topic of conversation after the talk was, wow, this could be something that's important for quality of life in respect to injuries for that experience. So this is why you got to speak up. Yeah, you know, I mean, it was actually a brilliant idea.
Yeah, that's true. I people around me might not like me speaking up, you know, too often about things I don't know much about. But it's not going to stop me, I guess.
No, but it shouldn't. You have great ideas. Every time I talk with you, I get fantastic ideas. You are aligned with our type of thinking, come up with innovative ideas. And what I love about FSHD Global is you guys actually, you come up with a plan and you carry it out.
I'm following a line of innovators there. I can't claim, you know, the success to the innovation and ideas. You know, Bill and Natalie have.
But Natalie's a force of nature, right?
She absolutely is.
Likewise with Bill.
Yeah.
Bill is still right. No, we know where he gets it from. Yeah, those two really, they just move mountains. And, I mean, there's a case of a small foundation. You know, the $1 million budget, they get so much done, you can't believe it. They actually talk about bang for your buck, but it was having properly motivated people, smart people, innovative people. You don't need an army. You just need a few people, the right people, doing actually caring enough to carry out the plan. And I think you're a perfect fit with this foundation, just so you know.
Thank you. And you know, you say you don't need an army. I think that is actually one of FSHD Global's biggest secrets. We do have an army of sorts.
You don't need a paid army.
Yeah, we only have a paid army of one full-time staff and two part-time staff members. But we have a board of directors, many of whom who have either lived experience or a link into lived experience with the disease. We have people with a long-standing history and expertise through our scientific committee and our scientific advisory board. We surround ourselves, and this is how Bill has always set the foundation up, we surround ourselves with people who have something to offer, and we surround ourselves with people who share our values and share our motivation and commitment, and that's our FSHD army. So yeah, it's not a paid staff, but we have a network of unbelievable supporters through our clinician network, through our scientists, through our researchers. And we develop a long friendship with people who join our forces. I think we draw people in and we keep them.
No, I think it's fantastic.
If I can say something, Pete, you know, I think that from my experience as a scientist, you can't do anything without being engaged in the community and without the community's support and engagement in what you do, because, you know, it can be a lonely lot of hours at midnight, you know, when you're waiting for that result that doesn't work about 50 times, and then one day it comes and you show it to people who it matters to, and, you know, like your whole evening is made.
Oh, I absolutely completely agree. You know, it's not everybody's cut out for life and science. I think you would agree with that. You have to take a lot of disappointment, a lot of hard work. It's how you respond. One thing, actually, the way I choose people, one of the ways is how they respond when the experiment doesn't work. It's easy to be happy when the experiment does work. I like people to take it personally. and take offense and are going to figure it out because they understand the importance of it. Because it's not just that the experiment worked. It's because the reason it worked is because you want to help your community, right, moving forward. And so it's just, no, that's why we are very careful who we work with, whether it's foundations or with researchers. That's why I'm happy to work with you and help you guys with the diagnostic. And I think we should do more. But
we need your help.
No, you don't need any help. You just need more eyes on the project. You know, it's always good. A little more, you know.
Yep.
Well, you know what I love about you, Peter. So we work with you all the time. We're in contact all the time. When was the last time the foundation wrote you a check and funded your work?
I don't know. I think they kicked in $100,000 for the pig a couple of years ago when we first got that going, but we actually haven't asked you for any money.
This is for any money.
I feel a little guilty. I feel like, you know, we're very fortunate. We get a lot of funding, and you always offer. I know that you're always telling me if I need funding, just ask you. But you know, there's a lot of labs that need funding, maybe aren't as fortunate as us in getting the research, you know, but I don't know.
I really respect that. For you, it's not about the funding, it's about the collaboration.
Well, these are the people are most important.
And it's about the alignment of priorities. So I really, you know, there's not a lot of labs that we have or researchers that we have ongoing contact and support from.
They only pick up the phone if you're going to write them a check, right?
But we do have that with our, you know, our clinician-based researchers. You know, we might fund projects from them, but we also have ongoing relationship and contact. But I really respect that about the Jones Lab.
I don't even think about it's the personal interactions and the professional interactions that are the real value for us. And I've gotten in trouble saying this before, so I apologize for the people who get upset about this, but I say there's plenty of money out there in a certain sense. I say the importance, the commodity are good people to work with, good technologies, you know, really truly translational technologies and things, innovative minds. And the people are the commodity and the resource because, you can go sideways on that, but you do need money. Sometimes I forget, Takako's always reminded me, you know, we do actually need funding for the project at some point. Well, we do a lot with a little, but because that's not the main motivation, right? The motivation isn't to get as much money into the lab as possible. The motivation is to do as much good as we can and to actually respond to the needs of the community. And that's what I like about the Australian, actually the whole research community in Australia, actually. You know, Rob, you're saying, you know, there's researcher, whether it's your clinicians I know down there, your foundation, you guys are really, because money's tight. Well, so you have to choose what you're going to spend it on, and you really are responsive to the needs of the community, and, you know, you have a plan, and, you know, you want to get clinical trials to Australia.
Yes.
And you got a plan to do it, and you're carrying it out. Meanwhile, you're also doing some, you know, some diagnostic work there. You're doing some translational work. You know, you have to focus, you know, and so, you know, you've chosen some innovative places to focus your therapeutic approaches. You free to talk a little bit about your therapeutic approaches that you're doing? No one's listening. So
that's okay. That's all right if they are. It'll put them to sleep. there's a hypnotic tone coming through that you can't hear. So we'll put them to sleep. But look, you know, I've worked in the Duchenne field, you know, for 20 years, and you know, I committed to that, and then, you know, a lot of things happened, and that kind of died down, you know, for reasons that I couldn't understand, you know, because I think there's still a need, continues to be a need, and we started off doing gene correction, which is now called gene editing. In the term of the Duchenne form of muscular dystrophy is gene correction. In the term of FSHD, it's actually gene knockout.
Gene destruction. We got to get rid of the DUX4 gene instead of fix it. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's the same. It's the same thing from a molecular standpoint. And we've been doing it for a long time in muscle. We started an approach in 2000, which was to correct the mutation that was causing the disease in non-muscle cells of people with muscular dystrophy. And it didn't matter what muscular dystrophy we were talking about. If we work on Duchenne, it applies to FSH, if we work on FSH, it applies to Duchenne. And I'm happy to say that that's true. You know, so it gives you that breadth of experience and understanding and application that you can just apply the same paradigm to different situations. And so what we started out with was non-muscle cells from a person with the muscular dystrophy, get them out like skin. And we didn't know how to do that at the start, but now there's iPS technologies, induced pluripotent stem cells. And, you know, so that technology evolved as we were working through. So we don't have to do that anymore. So we can get skin from a person with muscular dystrophy. We can correct the mutation in those cells, make them into muscle via this iPS, so iPS process. And we can then get a scaffold. So we've been involved in this tissue engineering aspect.
Right. Well,
but we work in biological scaffolds and biomimetic scaffolds, we call them, because there are issues with getting the types of scaffolds that we've been hearing about today, in that you've got to get them from either animals or humans. And that's very difficult to do. And that's costly.
So you're thinking synthetic? Is that what you guys are thinking?
Yeah. So we've worked with electrical stimulation to make muscle cells much more able to repopulate muscle after we correct the mutation.
Sure.
And then we've worked with scaffolds that we can either inject. So what we use is self-assembling peptides. So these are peptides that are components of the extracellular matrix.
It's the wine, I think, actually. We're in Napa, guys. We're in Napa.
You're not supposed to tell them that.
By the way, we're on a deck at the Silverado Resort in Napa, California, having some wine. So, you know, cut around some slack here.
Yeah. So that's basically what we do. And that's how we're working with FSH Global.
So that's great. So that's a little bit of the therapeutic and also applications for getting your muscle strength back.
That's potentially right.
Repopulating the problem. Yeah.
Well, you see, muscular dystrophy is a cell depletion problem. So what happens is you have stem cells on the left-hand side and muscle fibers on the right-hand side, and a whole series of stages of what's called differentiation along the way. And when you remove the muscle, then it's like a domino effect upstream, and you have cells that become the next stage, the next stage, the next stage. And if you keep removing that muscle, you end up losing the precursor cells. And that's what is behind the dystrophy, because then you lose the ability for the muscle to regenerate. And that's what we've been focusing on for 20 years, to restore that stem cell pool.
Right, so that's definitely the Duchenne model for sure, right? As a stem cell disease. There's some dispute about micronychia, actually, you know, it's completely a stem cell disease right there, right? Yeah, with FSHD, it's always been a little bit up in the air about that, because you definitely are losing the muscle, right?
It's the same problem. It's dystrophic muscle. You're removing muscle fibers.
So you're driving regeneration at the same point. So how much of... And some of the therapies that are proposed just stimulate regeneration, and that could potentially just accelerate the problem if you're not fixing the underlying condition.
Yeah.
Where you still got to fix the underlying condition. Yeah. So that's really cool. Are you guys Global supporting this work, or is that?
Yes.
Cool.
It's a collaboration that we've started a couple of years ago now. And I think it's strengthened even further through the establishment of the Australian FSHD Research Alliance and this, you know, sustainable research model that we've created, which has, you know, been in largely from Rob's influence and suggestion to, you know, and his ideas on how we can take this forward in a, you know, efficient way, because like you said, you know, money is hard to raise and
money is hard. Well, you know, so you got to use it wisely. And this is actually my top, you know, long-time listeners would understand my number one complaint is wasting money. And again, I don't mind high risk, high reward. It's just having a plan, but identifying programs that are translationally relevant. I really, you know, you can spend your whole career working on stuff that just doesn't matter. It can be good science, solid science, make papers, publications. You know, I think foundations should focus on things that are going to move the needle, really just move, you know, change the game. and if they work. And so, yeah, it's fine if they're high risk, but the concern I have is if you fund something and everything works and it just doesn't matter. I'm like, that's a waste of somebody's money. And then so there's some others, but you guys just do a really good job. I think you are really good at finding impactful science to fund. You've had, that's been going on as long as Bill's had the organization. Yep. And that's great. And most of this comes from the chocolate ball. Is this, yes. I mean, number one?
Yep. That's our number one event. I mean, we have a couple of smaller events throughout the year as well. We have people who give monthly. We have, you know, our monthly givers help us, you know, maintain these programs throughout the year, because the chocolate ball is, you know, one event, a huge, amazing event. It's on the 21st.
I got to tell you, it's an amazing event. And I recommend flying to Australia and going there if you're not in Australia. Yeah. Let me tell you, it's off the charts, man. That is some
chocolate poisoning.
21st of October this year, Peter.
I have my calendar.
Yeah, good.
I haven't told Takiko yet, so.
You should come and enjoy one, Peter.
You got to keep the lab running. Someone's got to work while I'm goofing around.
If anyone hasn't heard Peter's speech from the Chocolate Ball last year, it's available on the Foundation's YouTube page. And I'll give Peter the link so he can pop it in the link here. But one of the best speeches we've had at the ball. We had our doubters when we said we had a scientist as our keynote the night. He blew it out of the park. It was amazing.
You need an extra minute on that video of the MC notifying me before going on stage that I'm going to kill all the energy in the crowd that he had just spent all night drumming up, because this idiot science, he's like, oh my God, you're going to kill the crowd. Well, it's like, I'm going to have to do this all over again. It's like that. I mean, that's what you want to hear before going on stage is, you suck, buddy.
Didn't know the Jones music, did he? It was brilliant. No, so if anyone hasn't seen Peter's talk, it's worth a look. And he assures me that he spoke slowly so that his accent wasn't
again. I don't have an accent
for people. It was a high energy, high impact speech. And we really appreciate you coming out to Australia.
Yeah, I love it. It was fantastic. I really had a great time. And I jokingly say I'd like to come again, but on the other hand, I don't think I could live up to doing it. I think you strike gold once, maybe. I don't know. but oddly enough, the best compliment maybe was from who was the MP that was there?
Jamie Jury.
No, not the MC, the MP that you had a member of parliament.
Mike Freelander.
Dr. Freelander was there. I got back to the table. He said, You got a career in politics coming, Beth. It's just like,
the compliment.
I don't know if it's a compliment either, because I actually told the truth. I spoke from the heart and told the truth, which maybe is not what politicians should be doing.
That's a good segue to something else that the Foundation's been able to do is have a voice to government. We've established a parliamentary.
No, that's fantastic. That's brilliant. You have like a little friends of FSHD in the parliament, right?
Yes. And our co-chairs, Dr. Mike Freelander and Bridget Archer and Monique Ryan, are hosting another parliamentary friends in August. And I'm really excited for, partnering with the Australian government and the state governments on our future clinical trials program, we've got,
you need their help, right? You gotta, I mean, but the thing about it is at least in the US, I mean, Congress just spends money on all sorts of pet projects. Might as well get in there and have yours be the pet project, because it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of rhyme to reason in this country, other than you just need to get one politician involved and interested.
Yeah.
And, you know, rare disease is tough, right? You can't, you know, but I think what you guys showed Parliament, in my opinion, is that you're a legit organization. You know, this, you actually are making impact. You know, it's a fairly common rare disease. And it's a way for the government to actually have positive impact on a, you know, a patient population. I mean, you guys,
yeah.
I mean, I think if you guys weren't a solid organization, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
But, you know, and of course it helps have Bill.
Well, yeah. And it's providing government with a framework that can apply to any rare disease.
Well, right. Might as well be first and then let everybody else get on. I imagine people are going to copy your roadmap for.
We hope they do, because that's a goal of the foundation, to have the broadest impact possible to the widest range of the population possible. So if our framework can help other diseases and help absolutely other people, then we are all for that, and we are happy to share and collaborate with anyone that needs it.
No, we're the same with sound. I feel that, you know, FSHD lagged behind so many of the other diseases for years. We're learning from Duchenne, learning from SMA. Now we're kind of leading in the science. We're leading in CRISPR. We got the tissue engineering going. We're kind of leading in that. Might as well lead in advocacy and how to actually bring clinical trials and get them up and going. Yeah. You know, the clinical trial research network that's around the world, you know, it's FSHD, but also for myotonic, limb girdle, Duchenne, you know, but it's being driven by FSHD.
Yes. And we got CTRN sites opening in Australia.
Absolutely. We promised them we're bringing clinical trials to Australia. Australia's going to lead. Yeah.
That's right.
No, absolutely. It's fantastic. No, I think that's a brilliant idea. I don't think they've even thought of that here. I remember Dan Perez, who founded the FSHD Society, good friend of mine. Dan did a great job, did more out of his kitchen than, well, anyway, Dan did a great job with his mom out of his kitchen to getting things going. And he testifies in front of Congress, and he's like, you know, you go in front of Congress and you give your spiel, and they just say, sorry, not enough money, you know, nothing we can do. And Dan was really bummed, but he said the next speaker one year was Julia Roberts. And she came up, and because her niece has Rett syndrome, and she gave her spiel, and they told her the same thing. Sorry, because, you know, it didn't matter that she was a celebrity. They basically gave her the same spiel, you know, and it just sounded like they were just going through the motions, congressional testimony, rare disease, bring everybody in, and you're all screwed because we're buying jets or something, you know?
Yes.
And, but you guys, you know, you're making an impact with the government. I think that's fantastic.
You know, it depends what your ask is. Right. So our ask isn't just financial. Our ask is support. Our ask is policy. Our ask is, you know, the way that our funding system works for diagnostics. Our ask is support to ensure Australians can access diagnostics. And our ask is support for a consistent and agreed diagnostic framework for the country. So our ask isn't just financial, because it's not just money. It's not just going to take money to solve this problem. It's going to take collaboration across the state.
But that's again why you guys are doing it right. You have a plan.
Yep.
Right. It's not short-sighted. It's a long-term plan that you put in place, and you're carrying out all the aspects of it from diagnostics, clinical trial sites, clinical trial readiness, getting therapeutics going, organizing your patients, organizing your researchers, your clinical sites.
Yep.
And also making sure that there's money for research. I mean, where do you get your research money from other than global? Does the Australian government fund your research?
I scrimp and save, and I make every single dollar do five things. It's not easy. So we have at the moment $1,000 worth about $800,000 for making muscle. And that was a starting point. So we're at the end of that grant, and I write probably about 10 grants a year with very little success in Australia.
So what, you know, what's the funding rate in Australia?
Probably about 2%.
2%. Oh, wow. Holy cow.
2 to 3%.
You know, Takako got a 12% on her recent pig grant that was not funded. It was outside the funding range. You got to have 11 is the cutoff here. Well, I'm kind of pissed, but 11 sounds pretty good now.
Well, we got 5.5 last year, and the cutoff was 5.6. So, you know, like you have stories like that, and the same grant this year will probably get 22.5, you know, like it's a little bit
arbitrary, yeah. When you get
and you can't really rely on government funding as such, because I think the government funding is really stressed, and so once you accept that, and then you come to this construct like AFRA, where you've got, we call it sustainable research. So you make a spin out company that then markets technology that's not FSHD related necessarily, but is can be used for FSHD, and that is then used to generate funding for the FSHD research. So our funding, you know, like I put in a lot of grants, and I'm lucky to be at RMIT because RMIT, I have a tenured position, so I don't have to worry about my salary anymore. I've worked for 20 odd years having to find my own salary. And so it's not easy in that environment, plus another two people. So, you know, it's not easy in that regard. So what you've got to do is you've got to think about what people want and try and morph it into what FSHD needs or muscular dystrophy needs.
I think that's good. So previous podcast, I caught a lot of grief for this on a previous podcast because I mentioned that you can have too much money. And this I talked with Chip about this, actually. Yep. When I was talking with Chip, he said one of his concerns about putting in $100 million to FSHD is that you can have too much money. And the example I use is when money's tight, you actually got to think about your experiments.
Exactly.
You got to think about your priorities. Do I need to do this? What is the result of this? Yeah. And you still need money, but you know, you can be dumb if you got a lot of money, honestly.
Well, I think the ideal situation is where it's all about people. And, you know, like we can't do anything without the community that we're doing it for. And we can't, you know, like you can work with a dozen people and maybe one of them will be the right person to work with because they don't share the same ideology as
I don't work with any of them. Man.
That's right.
It's tough to find, but you're right. You got to align yourself with people that are similarly aligned. Yeah.
And so you set yourself up so that you can actually help people. And so all of my staff now are employed by RMIT. We don't have to worry about generating their salaries anymore. And that's, you know, great. That's only $25,000 a year because we don't get paid much in Australia.
But you get to live in Australia.
Well, that's right.
Yeah, you got a house, a place in Tasmania, man. Tasmania, I mean, come on, that's got to be worth something.
You're painting me to be a real, real fat cat.
But it is true. Salaries do suck up a lot, and if you can cover salaries, yep. But honestly, when you get money from a foundation, I'm sorry, I know how hard you work to get money. When you give me money, I mean, it's actually more valuable. I feel more pressure.
Oh, you
I got to tell you, I feel so much pressure when you give us money in a good way, though, because we don't want to let you down.
Yeah.
I know that people, I know the kid, I mean, literally having bake sales, people are having lunch, people are, you can do these golf outings, you do dinner, you have lunch with, we actually have some really innovative fundraisers, but man, you can't throw that money away, man. You got to, I mean, yeah, everything doesn't work. You can have high risk, high reward, but it can't be, you can't throw it away.
Yep.
You know, and the work has to move the needle, at least conceptually. If this works, we move the needle. That's the bar that we have in our lab. We're making tools for people and then making sure that, you know, get everybody on board. So I think foundation money is important. And we impress upon our people, as I'm sure you do too, that, you know, this is, you know, the tube of DNA is a person that is counting on you. Yep. The money to fund that came from a person who is counting on you. This is more than a job. If you just want a job, go somewhere else.
I'm the same. And, you know, I took up this role as managing director of the foundation, already having a lot of my friendship circle as, you know, part of the FSHD community. And I thought that would, you know, inspire me to work hard. And it does more than that. It weighs heavily on me because I feel...
Now they count on you.
Responsible and accountable and deeply motivated for outcomes for them and for all the other FSHD community members that I don't know because I don't know them, but I know their journey.
They know you.
I live their journey. Yeah, yeah. Every time I have a challenge with something FSHD related, I know that there are thousands out there having a harder time than I am.
But so you were there with us, right? And you know, we're out there hanging out with the patients, having a good time. And all invariably it comes down to, why are you curing mice? Why aren't you curing me?
Yep.
Get sick of curing mice. You know, when is my cure?
We had mice running on treadmills years ago. What are you doing? Yep.
That's your treadmill. We got you on a treadmill. So strap you in.
Frustration. And
but now it's coming to you. Now you're on the other side.
You know what? I hear it. I get phone calls from people who have children who are struggling to sit up in their wheelchair.
I get
phone calls from people who are newly diagnosed.
Toughest, probably, maybe.
Yeah.
What's coming? They Google FSHD, Google muscular dystrophy. They say, holy cow, this is what's coming.
It's tough. And, you know, I'm only fairly recently diagnosed myself, and it's still fresh in my mind going through those emotions. I know what they're going through. But I'm fortunate that I've had some time to reflect since my diagnosis. I've had the opportunity to surround myself with some amazing people
That's
with
true.
FSHD in the field And in some ways, FSHD has brought me the best aspects of my life.
Us too, actually. And we don't have, I mean, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of opportunity for meaningful work, for meaningful involvement in the community in whatever capacity you want to be involved. Some people, and I'm one of those people, find it almost therapeutic to be part of it all and to be part of the solution rather than just sitting on the sidelines and experiencing the challenges, because you're going to do that anyway. It's going to be hard.
That's gonna, anyway. Exactly.
Everyone's got their thing that's hard, whether you have FSHD or not. Everyone has challenges. And at least with FSHD, we do have, not all conditions have a foundation. Not all rare diseases have someone that's out
someone
there.
Someone has to step up, right? Someone has to step up.
And we have Neil, we have Chip, we have Bill Moss, you know, we have the FSHD Society. We have got Dan Perez. We have got all of these
people. You.
Carino. We have me, that's right. Well, you know.
Well, could join the team, right? We could have any of you out there too.
That's right.
Right, you know, yeah, if you're thinking about this, you want your life to have some meaning. I've actually said this. It actually has given meaning to our professional life to be part of the FSHD community.
Yep.
Well, can I just say that without the FSHD community, and they picked our research up out of the ground, you know, like we weren't getting anywhere for 20 years, and the funding that we got from the community via Nat, Bill, and Emma, you know, it has resurrected this work to a point where we can really do something about it.
And other communities are going to benefit from that.
Exactly.
Right? Again, exactly. So what they're doing, the same thing that we're doing. So people have asked us, how can you run an entire lab on a single rare disease? It's because we use it as a platform for other diseases. You know, epigenetics is about half the human diseases are epigenetic. So we can use that. You know, CRISPR therapeutics. We can use CRISPR for all sorts of things. Adenovirus, AAV gene therapy. You know, diagnostics, these things, you know, they're globally applicable. We just use FSHD as the platform, just like you're using FSHD now as a platform for other foundations, actually, how to you know, build a community and to get impact from the government in Australia. So that's one way to do it. It actually gives you more, it's actually, well, one, it gets other people off your back too, a little bit, because some, you know, there's competitive space and you can say we're trying to help everybody, but FSHD is number one.
And you want to talk about innovation and different thinking. I think, you know, we're sitting here in Napa at this BioScaffolds conference. We should actually also give a shout out to Neil Kamada, because he finds these opportunities where, you know, someone's doing something that might be helpful, and he links in all the right people. He brings you guys into the mix. He's so well connected, and he says, you know what, I don't know how this is going to work, but come help me.
So I guess I should mention, why are we here? So I gotta tell you, so
you asked that at the start.
No, but you've actually
been drinking too much.
No, this is actually the real reason we're here. We're here because you know, before Solve FSHD, when Chip was kind of getting pissed about falling down, and y'all know our friend Chip Wilson, founder of Lululemon and Solve FSHD, he basically was like, I need a calf and I need a bicep. That's right, I'm good. Right. And he wanted to 3D print it. And it was just like, yeah, we can do that. It's going to be dead. It'll be dead. Right? We can do that. Or we can make a mouse. A millimeter. We can give you a millimeter calf. So they started looking around to say, where can you possibly get some sort of technology to get some muscle health and regain muscle health? And they sent me all these programs. And they just kept sending me all these idiotic programs. Hey, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about this guy? There was one guy. I looked at, hey, you know, this guy actually looks like he kind of knows what he's doing. He's well-funded. He's worked with the DOD. Looks like legitimate science, because there's a lot of stuff out there that ain't legitimate. And I said, you know, Neil, this is, of all your crazy ideas, this is the least crazy or the best chance to work. Next thing you know, I'm on the phone with this guy, Steve Badalak, University of Pittsburgh, works on, and he's actually hosting this meeting. He's the organizer of the meeting. And we started working with him on some FSHD projects. And I think it's interesting technology. But we got there because they wanted to, Neil and Chip kind of you know, pounding the pavement to say what's out there that could be, who doesn't know anything about FSHD that could help people with FSHD? Let's get that community wider, you know? And so that's why we're all here. That's why you're here. That's why, you know, Rob, you're here. We're all here. And yep. And it's actually, you know, we're teaching them about FSHD and they're teaching us how to improve muscle health, you know, and I think there's some legs to it.
I hope so.
And they got great food and wine here in Napa. I got to tell you. So we're hoping.
I don't know. I think there's comparable wine in Australia.
We've had some. There's Australian wine all over the place. Yeah. What is that? What's that wine?
You know?
Yeah. It's always like $4, man. What is it? Yeah.
Which one?
What is Yellowtail, right?
Yellowtail.
I know you got some good ones. We brought some back. We brought some back from Australia. No, we got some. I know you got some good wine there, but we're in Napa. You can't. You're just sacrilege, man.
Just a little bit of a hint. Like if you buy Yellowtail, you've always got a stopper. Like if you buy the Yellowtail Prosecco,
they have
it's
a
got a stopper. It's got a stopper on it that you can use for any other Prosecco.
Well, there's the life hacks for you.
There you go.
Yeah, the Prosecco is pretty good. I remember when the tails were different, you know, like when I used to come to the States, I used to work with a guy from UCSF, a guy called Dieter Grunert, who's passed. But, you know, like I think the hit rate here was around about 10%. It was during the first Iraqi war. And apparently America was spending something like $50 million a day on the war and hardly anything on research. And, you know, so our hit rate at that time was 25%, and he was lamenting the fact. And I was the one that was bringing the, you know, the high-end Yellowtail wine.
No, it's history. So anyway, so the technology, just briefly, you know, it's just the idea that that there's some natural molecules that you can isolate from tissues, and these will stimulate immune modulation that can have therapeutic benefit for, you know, the environment to stimulate muscle growth. It can be anti-inflammatory, generally just provide maybe a healthier system for regrowing, maybe some muscle regeneration, preventing some destruction that may occur in a bad environment. I'm not exactly sure how these things are going to pan out. Typically, people are using this technology in generally healthy tissues that have other issues, not genetic diseases, but hey, why not? You know, I think it might be best for combinatorial therapies, but we'll see. Anyway,
there's a lot of things that actually act in that way where, you know, I started out in muscular dystrophy using a molecule called leukemia inhibitory factor,
all right,
which comes out of the blood. And like we got some really great results, couldn't get funding for it for, you know, pound or money or whatever, you know, but you can, the idea is that in most muscular dystrophies, you have some level of reparation that occurs from the fetal tissues that are formed during embryogenesis, right? And so what ends up happening is that you then switch over to adult genes, and that's when the dystrophic process kicks in, and it happens differently in all people. And that's what we found, that if you actually put this leukemia inhibitory factor into dystrophic muscle, then you actually hypertrophied the muscle. And it's similar to the results that we saw with some of the products that have been presented here. But there's a lot of this forgotten technology that's been a one-off that we could combine and make it work in a synergistic way because they affect different pathways.
And LIPT1's already in clinic for certain things, right? That must be
approved.
So that's the other thing, is the technologies that are already in people, proven safe, and if they could have benefit now, which would actually, you know, combinatorial therapies. And that's actually, you know, I think so sometimes what people forget, and I know you don't forget this, time is ticking. Right, you're getting worse. It's a progressive disease, and you say, "Yeah, everything's 5 years away." You know, some things don't have to be, right? They don't have to be. Let's kind of push it to the forefront and get things going now, right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And you know, this is what we as a foundation welcome. We welcome new thought ideas. We welcome debate. We welcome innovation. And you know, you can't fund everything, but you can
make choices.
You can make choices. You can prioritize. And it's all about, you know, stacking the deck in your favor, isn't it? You've just got to look at what's possible, what's probable, and what would make the biggest difference and
impact.
That's what we try to support.
All right. So I want to shift gears a little bit.
Right.
That's all right. because you are also a wonderful advocate, you know, and so a little bit. So I told you I'll let you ask me anything about FSHD, but first I want to ask, I got a question for you because it's something that's always kind of, I'm not sure I fully understand.
Yep.
And that is this idea of ableism. Right. Ableism, you hear this online and people get crucified in some way for being an ableist, and probably rightfully so.
Yep.
But also sometimes, you know, it's just not really clear. Can you explain a little bit about the ableism and what's going on? Because, you know, it's I think it's can be a serious problem, especially in the workplace.
It can be. And it exists probably more than able-bodied people realize, because sometimes you don't notice the way language or assumptions affect people, you know, when it's not you, because we're all a little bit selfish like that. We sort of only exist in our own reality. So, you know, people sometimes might not realize just those intrinsic barriers that people with disabilities can come up against.
I've always considered it a blessing that you don't see yourself the way other people see you, or else none of us would ever go out of the house.
That's true.
At least I wouldn't.
You know, ableism is almost like this ingrained, and this is my experience of it, right? Everyone is going to have a different opinion, and you can feel free to you know, disagree with me. But in my experience, it's this idea that it's an ingrained value system that is not conscious. So it's an unconscious bias towards able-bodied existence rather than placing the same value on people with a disability. So it's things like people might assume that someone with a disability is less likely to work. That's a good example. So I give a lot of speeches and to high school kids, and I often play a game with them, two truths and a lie. And I'll say, all right, you've heard of this game. I'm going to say three things. Two of them are truths and one's a lie. And I might say things like, I work full time in an executive role. I ride horses. I need help in the shower every day. And can
interesting.
You guess, yeah.
Okay.
Can you guess which one?
I'm going to win this one. I know that.
Yeah, well, you got a leg up. But
I can see where that's actually brilliant.
And my two truths, they always get stuck because they can't believe either of those things are true. One, that I ride horses, or two, that I have a full-time executive position.
You just see the wheelchair and that's it, man. You need help. Yep. You need help. You need help. That's all they can see.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll throw in there, I'm a welfare recipient. And they always think that's the truth. I don't receive a cent of welfare. Never have in my life. And it's about just challenging those assumptions that we make without even thinking of it. An ableist action, though, might be if you make a comment or you know, it's almost like, you know, a discriminatory action against someone just because of their disability. You might behave in an ableist way
so that'd be like, I have a task that I need to assign to somebody, but okay, well, you're out because you're in a wheelchair, so I'm just going to consider these people, and by the way, promotion is going to depend on who does these types of tasks, and now you're not. And so everything is, and without even considering that you can do the job as good as anybody else, but you know, you're in a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. So, I mean, you know, and then we sort of go into a sliding slope about, you know, the way we treat people. And, you know, a lot of people with disabilities are told they're inspirational, and that can almost be an ableist comment to make, because it depends in what context you're making that statement. Am I inspirational? And I'm giving this example because it's been said to me that I've gotten out of bed and brushed my teeth in the morning.
I'm inspirational then.
Right.
Half the time.
That's tough for all of us, right? I used to catch the train to work every day.
So the bar's pretty low.
The bar's low. I used to get train to work every day, and you know, more often than you might think, someone would ask me where I was all dressed up and heading to that day, some stranger on the train. And I would say,
don't you look pretty? Where are you going, sunshine?
Just to work.
Yes.
And then one time I had a lady follow up with, where do you work? They are amazing. And it didn't help that at that time where I worked wasn't amazing. I was in a really tricky spot and I was being treated pretty terribly because of my disability. So where I worked wasn't amazing. They were discriminating against me. Then this lady on the train telling me how wonderful my boss is just for having employed me.
They must be a saint. They have someone like you around the office. Like
that's right. Yeah.
So let me ask you though, real quick, on that exact thing though.
Let me finish. Whereas if you said to me, I'm inspirational because you admire the work that I'm doing, my work ethic, my ability to get stuff done, my disability is part of that existence. My disability is part of what I do for my job. It doesn't make it ableist to admire that about me, but it's ableist if that is the only thing you're admiring and there's no substance behind.
I understand what you're saying, but right now I get all stressed out is I talk to patients all the time. I talk at meetings and I do tell them the community is inspirational to our lab. That's why we like having people come by, but not just because it's like, hey, there's somebody, like there's some dude in a wheelchair. What I find inspirational to us is the fact that you just don't let any of this get in the way. It's like, you know, you're living your life, you're traveling, you're doing everything just like everybody else. And oftentimes not even complaining about it, right? People just, and you say that inspiration, what's inspiration? It's just
meaningful inspiration to you because it literally inspires what you're doing every day in your lab.
Well, it just makes you think you're doing, it's
inspired
just,
by the patient community without being tokenistic and flippant about it.
I guess what I think about myself and what I complain about are things and you just think, you know, like I don't have, you know, it's not like you just get out of bed. Everyone has trouble getting out of bed sometimes. Just, you know, getting into work. There's mental issues about things. But it's just, you know, on top of, you know, life sometimes sucks for everybody. But on top of that, you know, you got to go through all the same stuff we got to go through. You have the same issues, the same other health concerns. You got family concerns. You got work concerns. Everyone's got the same, you know, but on top of that, you also have the FSHD under it and this prognosis. And sometimes, you know, this idea of, you know, long-term hope for therapy, worrying about your kids. There's all these additional things that are kind of put on there. Yet you just go through the day just like everybody else. I think, you know what, and set up fundraisers and do all these extra things. And I think, you know what, you do want to, you know, help, you know,
And I think, you know, that is really, you know, it's true, but I actually, in some ways, like I don't feel like I have a tougher gig than half of the people out there because I have things going for me that other people don't. I have a supportive family. I have a husband that loves me. I have kids. You know, there are people struggling with infertility that don't have some of the blessings that I have. So, yes, the number one challenge in my life is FSHD. Yes, I'm out there trying to do something about it. Does it make me less successful if I am collapsed in a heap crying about it one day? No, that's fine. That's part of the human experience. We can't have pressure to have this constant level of positivity about everything in our lives. But my way to deal with it is to be active in it. You know, that's my coping mechanism. Doesn't work for everybody.
So I guess I would say that it's not really FSHD specific. I guess it gets back to the way I was raised by my mom, which is instead of complaining about things, you do something about it.
Yep.
And for that, it was, you know, she was inspirational to me. I mean, when the teachers went on strike in third grade, she started a foundation to pass the school levy to increase pay for the teachers and get us back to school. You know, we had issues in the schools. She became a school board member. We had issues in the city. She became a city, you know, and she was actually a housewife, right? She wasn't like a trained and all. It's like, you had a problem. And so it's inspirational, but it's sort of the same thing. There's all sorts of ways that a patient, you can complain. I mean, doing the extra bit to say, I'm going to do something to improve the condition, not just for myself, but for other people as well, that this actually is you know, that's probably, I guess, part of what's inspirational because you're adding something on. You got your normal life going on and you're saying, I'm also going to do this extra bit. And so if everyone's just sitting back doing nothing, I don't know. It's just.
Yep. I agree, and that works for me.
I just don't want to offend anybody because I just kind of like the idea that We're helping people who are trying to help themselves instead of helping a bunch of just lazy slugs that just don't give a shit and just complaining. Where's my cure? Where's my cure? Where's my cure? You're out there saying, I'm going to be part of the solution. We're going to be part of it. That's what's inspirational, is work together like that. Not just that you have FSHD, that you're doing something about it.
You know what? I'm happy that if I'm able to kick in this effort and get things done, I want the people who aren't in a place to get out there and do something, and who are finding this really challenging, and, you know, we're not all in that same mental health space. I want them to benefit from all this too. And maybe, you know, maybe that's the tipping point where they do better, and so they're ready to be part of something and pay it forward in a different way. So
how do you help people be it? No, I think, quite possibly a lot of people, you know, these people you meet on the train, they don't mean to be offensive. They just, you know, they just don't know any better, right? You see somebody, I mean, so what do you do? How do you deal with
the right word? Offensive isn't the right word. I think it's ignorant.
Yeah. Well, ignorant. Okay, ignorant. Ignorance can be offensive.
For the most part, you know, it depends what day they strike me on. Honestly, it depends my frame of mind that day. For the most part, I just say, you know, I'm usually just brief and somewhat polite and thank them and move on. Okay, you know, I had one lady that was particularly intrusive about her comments and really, yeah, told me that she sort of felt sorry for my wretched existence.
Holy cow.
wow. And I said to her, well, you know what, I feel sorry for you. Am I the first disabled person that you've met? Because it's a boring world if we're all the same, and I live a good life. So
I think all the word disabled is very, very badly used. I don't, you know, like I've often wondered what the point is going into a disabled toilet.
Okay.
If it's disabled, it doesn't work. Right?
All right. And I'm really opinionated about this too, which is not unusual. But I have no issue with the word disabled. I have a disability.
Humanity is a spectrum.
Yeah, I identify as someone with a disability. I don't think it's a bad word, because I don't think disability is a bad thing.
Not right, but you're not disabled because you're not sitting there, you know, like spinning around in your wheelchair.
I am disabled.
You're actually a very able person.
No, I am disabled, and there's nothing wrong with
being disablest.
Yeah, no, that's part of it though. I am quite happy to be proudly disabled, because right. A disability doesn't make you less than
Emma, you know, like I saw you turn a room full of scientists upside down. And you know, like I mean, that's not a disabled person.
But I'm disabled, but I am very capable at as a person as well, because you can be both. You can be a capable, disabled person.
No, you have a disability, you have a challenge, you have a
okay.
A challenge.
No. So my favorite scientist here.
Tactical.
Yeah. No. This is a whole part of the disability pride movement. So I don't know if you've heard of that, but there is a whole movement about people reclaiming language around disability and being proud of who they are. And some people don't feel that way, and they don't want to be referred to as disabled. They want to be referred to as a person with a disability, and the person first language is a respectful way to approach that. That's fine.
Anyway, so let's get back. So this next thing I wanted to get to while you're still shaking your head is, do you have any questions on FSHD? Because I know you guys must have dinner reservations somewhere.
Always interested to hear your insight.
After that, you want to hear my insight?
I do. Still, I do. I always find your insights interesting on what's new, what's up and coming. What are you excited about? So obviously, you know, you've been in this field a long time. I always like to know, well, what keeps you up at night? What's your biggest worry for the field, or for FSHD within a, yeah. And then What are you most excited about, and what do you see on the horizon that you are just waiting for?
Any ideas, Tucker?
Excited about us.
Well, I can't say that. It's not very self-serving. No, okay. So let's see. Number one. So
what took me to some stuff in the lab the other day that just sounds brilliant. I think you can be excited about
it. Okay. Well, I am excited about it, but we'll start with what keeps me up at night. It's just, honestly, you know, the diagnostics, which are not diagnostics in this country, it's a research test where we are just trying to get some answers for people all around the world. And, you know, it's slower than, there's some complicated cases. We never want to get it wrong. And, you know, I just actually just generally feel the, feel the pain of the families that are waiting, especially when it comes to their kids. And when, you know, we get results back and say, wow, all three kids have the epigenetics consistent with FSHD. And you're just like, oh man, I don't want to write these reports. You just feel bad because then it compounds to the next thing. It's like, you know, we got to get these therapies faster, because we want to make sure that these kids are not going to be affected. And it just, it's like, how dare you sleep?
Quote from you from the chocolate ball was, we want to get to a point where we can say, you have FSHD, and this is what we're going to do about it.
Right. And it's just
what we're all here for.
And, you know, I got to tell you, it's I'm here in Napa. Takako's, oddly enough, is with me. Normally, she's back at lab working. She actually took a day off, which is very unusual, although she's working on her computer at night still. But the rest of the lab's working. But when I went to China, she was working harder than ever for both, you know, back in the lab. And we honestly just feel pressure from within. Is this the reason we're doing our research testing and eventually diagnostic for people around the world is because I am confident that we will be able to solve the problem. If we were just giving you a hopeless indication, and I couldn't do it. I really couldn't sleep, especially with the kids. And it's just, we know people are counting on us as a community. And honestly, what really keeps me up, Taka will know this, is actually, I'm a very angry person. You might be surprised to hear that. No, it's just,
might surprise you. We're not that surprised.
You can't believe, I know if you knew what I knew, you guys would be angry too. You guys, let me tell you, you guys think I'm just angry. Let me tell you, you'd be glad you don't know what I know. Of what goes on behind the scenes in the field with some of the foundations, some of the researchers, some of the pharma companies, and the crap that goes on when business decisions from science decisions that affect patients' lives. And I just want to I literally scream. In fact, here's me screaming. And and it's just because I understand it's a business. I understand there's a lot of things at play, but we've kind of taken the stance that we can take the what's best for the patient community as opposed to what's best for us. And oftentimes it's the same, but what's going on? You guys starting a fire over there? Sorry, we got a candle incident going on at the table. This is, I guess, cut her off. Anyway, sorry. No, it's just, when money's wasted, but more than anything, when I see decisions made by people that could make a difference, and in all honesty, choosing not to make a difference. You know, they're it's not my money, and sometimes it affects me, sometimes it doesn't, but it's just, I just go nuts. And it really does. I can stay up all night just having an argument in my head with these people.
That's
cute. I don't know. I just know because it gets back to the same thing. We just so bad want there to be a therapy and a treatment for all of our friends. You know, we don't have any friends that are not in the FSHD community.
Yep.
I mean, it's really true. People think we're kidding. We're not a very friendly couple. We had our researchers and we got.
The finger was pointed at Peter.
We're all your friends, pal. Yeah, no, I know. We're just kind of weird. We've
been in this gig a long time, I guess it's natural that's who you've surrounded yourself with.
But it's like family. It's like our family. It's just like, I mean, how would you feel if, you know, your kid came home from school and you found out they were being bullied and the teachers didn't give a damn? You'd want to go strangle the teacher, right? That's kind of how I feel when I find out that somebody's just sticking it to people in the community. Everyone's my kid. And man, that you better treat them well. I don't know. And maybe it's not my place, but I can't get out. It just drives me nuts. So it's an anger that kind of drives us. And then on the back end of that, the way I handle it is my favorite thing in the world is to absolutely stick it to people. We got it coming. You know, that's better than money. Better than money is just absolutely just giving somebody exactly what they deserve and sticking it to them. So it's going to come back and get them, I guess.
I think the best way is to put your energy into your work and bring us a therapeutic quicker.
Well, that's the thing. You know, when these idiots didn't want to fund us, we just did it ourselves. We started my FSHD. We did the diagnostics. We did it without anybody. And now you guys are helping us. And Neil Kmart at FSHD Canada is helping us. And we just, you know, eventually then the people who are sticking it to you come up and they try to suck up to you and try to be a part of it. So many times we've had people not fund some of our things that they now want to take credit to. And they're just like, you know what? We're doing it without you because it's the right thing to do. And actually, sometimes it's pretty fun to do it without you. You know, it would be a hell of a lot easier if people were on board at the beginning. You know, and some of that gets
meant to be easier, they say.
So what am I excited about? I'm excited, you know, I just got back from China and we are going to get our research test as a diagnostic throughout China. We're going to help the whole Chinese community. The reason I'm excited is it gives us an opportunity to teach another commercial lab how to do our diagnostic and to implement it and see how it works. Can we teach someone else to do it? Can the computer program accurately do everything? Because normally right now I'm doing it. Taka goes, and if that works, you know, we're going to do it with Australia. Talking to Rob about getting this set up in Australia, and we'll have it formally set up as clinically relevant test in Australia, do it throughout the U.S. I think this will be the worldwide test. I'm super excited because we're going to be able to, make sure everybody who needs a diagnosis can afford to get it because it's going to be cheap. They'll have access to it. So I'm super excited about that because as Takako said, what's coming, I'm telling you, our therapeutic program out of our research lab that is surprisingly good. I'll just leave it at that. We'll say, we are very excited about our CRISPR technology and our small molecule. You guys know it as the HANA drug. Not your HANA, but we have our own HANA who helped us develop this drug. And we're liking the looks of it. So I think we're going to have both a small molecule and a gene therapy in the near future that different people maybe need different things, different approaches, and may not be for one thing for everybody. And so we're just super excited. I mean, that's one reason, you know, my mom's like, you guys work so hard. We love it, man. It's like a drug, man. When you can see that your work is making a difference, you know, hey, there we go. I just got a request for a kit coming through right there. So you know what? I mean, that actually stokes me every time. You know, people need our help and we're able to help them. I mean, how much would it suck if someone wanted your help and you say, well, nothing I can do.
Yep.
Can't do anything. So, right. You know, there's a way that I think rarely do researchers have an opportunity to have their bench science actually directly help a patient population of any source. I think a lot of times you just hope that something you do someday may be used by somebody to do something that may someday help. You know, there's this sort of great disconnect between bench scientists and clinical research, and we're just doing it immediately.
As families that you help, Peter, I mean, I've shared this before, but you solved a 4-year misdiagnosis of my daughter. We were told she has FSHD. Australian Diagnostics diagnosed her as having FSHD, and you lifted that cloud from her, and you know, changed our life. But, you know, then confirmed by Sylvain, who I got to meet in Leiden the other day. But two amazing people that have had a direct benefit to my family personally too. But I love that you are so connected to your patient community and you know the people that you're helping, and that's why it's a personal mission for you. And I really respect that.
All right. So now I'm going to actually call brief audible at your husband sitting right here and let him finish his taco for a second. All right, Rob, what do you think about Emma working with the foundation? How is this all working out and everything? Anything you'd like to just...
Well, I just think she's amazing what she does, and she deserves everything that she's working for, and she should have confidence in herself and go for it.
The family, I mean, it's a family project, right? I mean, it's
definitely, yeah.
Well, he's here with me in Napa because I wouldn't be able to travel by myself. And, you know, it is a family disease. It requires family support, family commitment. I got my mum at home with our looking after our two kids. Actually, this weekend they're with Rob's brother and sister-in-law to give my mum a break because it's a 3-week stint without us there. But you know, the foundation supports me to bring a helper with me, whether it be Rob or my dad. So I, you know, I do a lot of travel with work. That means it's a twofold responsibility, but you know, he drops everything and comes along with me and helps me navigate, you know, inaccessible transport or
hotel. He drives on the wrong side of the road.
He manages driving on the wrong side
of
the road.
And I love it.
And you know, I'm lucky. I'm well supported at work to be able to do this job, and I'm well supported at home to be able to do this job, and it's a good thing.
But I'm very happy to help Erin to do everything she can and wants to do.
No, it's really good. That's got nothing to do, again, nothing to do with FSHD, actually. You know, spousal support is important regardless, you know. It's got I'm very fortunate with Takako's support. Well, we work together. We kind of are, I couldn't live without her. She couldn't live without, I don't know. It's she'd probably do fine without me.
Well, that's the same for me because Anita's involved in my research.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so, I didn't know that.
We're a team. We've always worked together.
So there you go. We got three teams here. We got, that's actually it's always good to, I will say that, you know, Takako's my third wife. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Three wives.
Not at once. I'd go for like half of a time if I could. No, I've had my third one. Well, because you know, I know what it's. I guess what the point I'm trying to make. I know what it's like when you're not aligned as a team with spouses, and that is a tough thing. So it's really important to be aligned to spouses, and so that's really great. So, all right. Well, you know what? We're keeping. You know, it's a beautiful day here. Beautiful evening here on the deck at the Silverado. We got some wine. I think we're going to go get some more wine, get some dinner. So let's wrap this up. You have anything, last words you want to impart on the community?
No, I said no, and then I'm going to say something. That's a bit of a contradiction, isn't it? Yes. I just think it's important for the community to know that, you know, we're all here. We're all doing the best we can. We've got a lot of people in the field that are juggling different priorities, that are juggling. I think everyone is legitimately trying to do the best that they can with what they have and the knowledge that
everyone?
They have. I do. I we might not agree with them all, I think that everyone in their own right is doing what they think is the best thing. And whether or not it is, we all just have to make the best we can with what we've got. And make the best of it and work together as collaboratively as we can. And I think what is really important for the patient community and the FSHD family community and, you know, their supporters to understand is that treatments are coming.
That's true. I agree with you there.
The future is bright.
Yep, absolutely.
And none of us can do what we're doing without you. So we need patients to be part of the program in whatever capacity they can be. We need them to sign up and join the registry. We need Australian patients to be part of our cell bank, donate their skin tissue to join the cell bank. We need people to share their stories so that industry understands how much this condition needs a solution. So get in there. Let us know how you want to be involved. Join in whatever capacity you can. You are welcome and you are valued in this community. So
absolutely. The more the merrier, right? The better.
That's
yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Rob, you want to sign off for us? What do you got?
I'll just take off from what Emma was saying. Nothing happens in this world without people. And I have to beg to differ with Emma about that disability and disabled stuff because, you know, like,
Well, she's in a wheelchair. We'll just, you know, just ignore it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that you know, humanity is a spectrum. And I think that we really need to recognize and not have that imposter syndrome that, you know, we all have as human beings. Doesn't matter whether you're in a wheelchair or whether you're, you know, an athlete. We all have imposter syndrome. And unless you get up off your butt and do something about it. And that's, I think you'd understand that, Peter.
Right.
You know, like with the story that you told today about the person that came to your lab and they happen to have FSHD. They sort you out. You wouldn't be here.
No, it's true.
If it wasn't for that
one person made a huge difference.
That one person.
Yeah.
And you know, like we're all capable of making a difference, and you need to find the difference that you want to make.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we're all on board with FSHD. We're going to make a difference here. My goal is to put us all out of business.
That's right.
You know, I want to retire and go to Tassie and do something. I want to check you.
Well, it's never going to happen.
You always cure it better. I know.
It's like you say, you know, like there's always something that you can do and there's always something that you can find to do.
Well, I want
to. I couldn't think of a better thing to do.
Yeah, curing FSHD, and I mean cure. I mean returning to a healthy state. We're going to stop the destruction. We're at this meeting to learn how to build the muscle back. A lot of technology. We want to get everybody healthy, fully healthy, and you know, and have one hell of a celebration. All right. Well, I really appreciate you all taking time out and joining me in this evening, this beautiful evening, and let's go hit the bar.
Thanks. See you later.
All right. See y'all.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MyFSHD podcast, where we share with you the latest news and information on FSHD as we strive for a cure. Do you have a question for Peter? He'd love to hear from you. You can reach him at peterjones@med.unr.edu. Thank you for listening, and join us again next time for more news and information.